The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio with Donal Kavanagh. We're with you until 12 noon today. We'll be keeping abreast of the stories of the day and also raising the issues which are important to you. If you want to tell us what those issues are, you can make contact with the program as ever. You can call us on 074-912-5000. Caroline producing and taking your calls. We have Shannon on the phones this morning as well. Shannon also looking after our social media. You can text or WhatsApp us on 086-6025000. You can use various social media. We're at Highland Hub on X. We're Highland Hub on X. We're at Highland Radio on Twitter. I always get those two. No, sorry. We're Highland Hub on Facebook and we're at Highland Radio on X. I always get that one mixed up. You can email us, of course, as well, comments@highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the show unfold, we'll have guests on Zoom. We'll have guests in studio over the course of the programme. You can do so. You can follow us on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, or indeed we're broadcasting the show live across our Highland Radio and Highland Radio News, Sports and Obituaries Facebook page as well. So plenty of ways to keep in touch with the programme. You can watch the programme unfold. And a good morning to Charlie, who's already on the socials, keeping an eye on the situation. And you're absolutely welcome to join him. Looking at the papers today, being a Thursday morning, it's the 3rd of October. And I don't know, it seems like it was July yesterday and it was May the week before last. So how we've suddenly got to October, I have to confess, it's something of a mystery to me. This year really seems to have flown. But it is October. It's the 3rd of October to be precise. It's a Thursday. That means we have two local papers this morning. The Donegal News, main story on the Donegal News. We've been treated like dirt, Donegal adult education tutor says. He could be forced to leave the sector after a pay deal reneged. Louise Doyle writes that an adult education programme tutor says he could be forced to leave the sector. Finn McKeon says he and others who deliver adult education programmes in the county have been left in dire straits after a deal they thought was agreed in February, it seems, is not being delivered in this area. And they're arguing that Donegal already had the lowest rates in the country. And indeed, Finn was on the programme earlier this week with Greg as well. So that's a story you'll be very familiar with. On the inside of the Donegal News, Paddy Gilday's butchery journey comes full cycle as he closes up shop. Many people in Letterkenny will know Paddy Gilday. Obviously, he operated the Friendly Butchers in every sense of the word, just across the road there from Old Dunn's in the vicinity of Old Town Road. Over 5 decades in the trade, and Paddy is closing up. He's moving on. And, we wish Paddy well, obviously, in his retirement, because he's been a fixture in that particular area and a fixture in the retail life of Letterkenny for decades. And indeed, Paddy ran for election on a number of occasions as well. So I would have had contact with Paddy as a budding politician. And he still, I suspect, will remain very, very heavily involved and interested in the local political scene. Also, ATU Awards honorary doctorate to Joseph Kennedy. Now, I did have the honour of being in ATU yesterday when Joseph Kennedy III, a grandnephew of John F. Kennedy and a member of that Kennedy clan, he's the special envoy to Northern Ireland for Economic Affairs, and he was honoured. It was the first ever honorary doctorate to be offered by ATU, and the fact that that ceremony happened yesterday at the Letterkenny campus was somewhat of a feather in the cap for Donegal. And Joseph Kennedy spoke very graciously at that particular event about the importance of cross-border cooperation in terms of education, and his commitment to education was absolutely clear. Looking at the front of the Tyrconnell Tribune, again another picture of Paddy Gilday outside the shop. A very important story. Chrysler remembers 10 lives lost. Next Monday will mark the second anniversary of the Chrysler explosion, in which 10 people lost their lives. And to mark the event, the bells in St. Michael's Church will ring at 17 minutes past 3 in memory of Shauna, Leona, Jessica, Catherine, Martina, James, Martin, James, Robert and Huey. Father John Joe Duffy will celebrate Mass on Saturday evening at 7:30 for all those who died in the tragedy. And there will be a special prayer service in St. Michael's Church on Monday night to remember those whose lives were lost in that horrific tragedy 2 years ago this coming Monday. And as we said, the bells will toll at 3:15 on Monday afternoon. 17 minutes past 3, the time the explosion happened 2 years earlier. And then that special prayer service taking place in St. Michael's Church at 7 on Thursday night. And our thoughts, obviously, as ever, with the people of Chrysler as they continue the long and horrific journey of trying to, we won't say come to terms with what happens, because I don't think you ever come to terms with that, but living with the legacy of that terrible tragedy is something that many, many people, and particularly the members of the families of the 10 who died, it's something that they're going to be with them for the rest of their lives, and we wish them well. The Irish Times this morning, inevitably in the post-budget discussion, thoughts now turning to an election, and Simon Harris was saying yesterday and on Monday and last week and the week before and the month before, don't speculate about elections, don't speculate about elections, don't speculate about elections. Simon Harris knows darn well that we're going to do very little else but speculate about elections. And according to the Irish Times, fast-tracked legislation to facilitate election in November. Officials are stepping up work on the finance bill, other key parts of the coalition's programme, and you know, Humphrey says babies born in December will be eligible for newborn grant. Now, here's what's happening. Basically, the government are giving lots and lots of incentives and bonuses and payments to people. Many of them, let's call a spade a spade, many of them very, very necessary in terms of the cost of living. There are many people who will do very well as a result of the extra payments they're getting. As you would have heard articulated on the show yesterday during Greg's discussions with various guests, there is an argument that says that when you make them universal, not only are you giving them to those that need them, you're giving it to those that don't need them as well. And maybe rather than give a payment to everybody, maybe give twice as much to the 50% who need it and not give a payment to the 50% who don't. But that's an argument that was well hashed out, I think, on the programme yesterday and is being hashed out all around the place. But certainly the widespread belief is that we are looking at an election in November, and that's going to be underlined by the fact that people will be getting the special payments and getting the special bonuses and getting the special considerations as that election campaign is winding on. And the idea from the government's point of view is it will make us more disposed towards returning the government. The opposition will continue to argue that a change of government is necessary, a change of policy is necessary, and we will see what happens. Interesting story on the front of the Times. Army pulls out of Portlaoise prison after 51 years on duty. Irish soldiers have been withdrawn from guard duty at Portlaoise prison after 51 years. Since 1973, the County Leash prison has been guarded by a platoon of Armed Defence Forces troops. Now, that's because Portlaoise would have been the primary paramilitary prison in the Republic. So any IRA prisoners, any other paramilitary prisoners would have been sent as a matter of course to Portlaoise, and those special army patrols and army guards there as a result of that. There was the decision to move all high security subversive prisoners, as they were described, to Portlaoise came after three IRA prisoners escaped from Mountjoy in a hijacked helicopter. Soldiers have been involved in several high-profile incidents in Portlaoise, including in 1974 when soldiers rescued hostages and retook control of the prison from rioting inmates. And I was 10 when that happened. I sort of remember it, actually. I remember the news story. Certainly remember the helicopter escape. That was an interesting one. Remember the big maze escape as well. Derry News this morning. Derry motorists urged to slow down. New data shows shocking speeding figures. The highest speed recorded by the PSNI in Derry last year was 129 miles an hour. And that was recorded on the Glenchain Road in Derry between June 1st and May 31st of this year. One of seven speeding incidents on the road recorded by the data, which has been provided to Derry News under a Freedom of Information request, and more on that story on the inside. Also, tributes paid in Derry to teacher, actress and singer Carita Kerr. Now, I would remember Carita Kerr and her husband John Kerr, a as I recall, he was an SDLP councillor, and he was mayor of Derry, and Carita would have been very well known as the wife of councillor and mayor John Kerr. But Carita very much also had her own identity in Derry as, and was very, very well known across the city. In some circles, Carita was better known than John, truth be told, as a singer and an actress and a teacher and a much loved lady, and a lady who would be very, very badly missed indeed in Derry. And our thoughts with Carita's family and with those who loved her. On the front of the Irish Independent this morning, in danger zone, Irish troops bunker down amid Lebanon fighting. And questions are now starting to be asked. Will the Irish army stay in Lebanon? My take on that, to be honest, is it's not really a decision, as I understand it, primarily for the Irish government. It's a decision that will be made, obviously, by the UN. What will the UN do in response to what's happening? Obviously, if Lebanon is moving toward war, and we hope it isn't, but if it's moving toward war, then the UN's role as peacekeepers will then have to be very much examined very, very carefully. We're reading, for instance, on the inside of the Independent, 8 Israeli soldiers killed in ground clashes with Hezbollah, and IDF are sending more armoured units and infantry across the border into Lebanon. Now, what Israel has been speaking about over the past couple of days has been very much forensic targeted incursions with very specific and very limited aims and objectives that we will, their argument is, we'll go in, we'll do what we need to do, and we'll get out. The problem is, however easy it may be to go into somewhere in that context, it can be very, very difficult indeed to get out. And things like US experiences in the Gulf over the past number of years have shown that you can plan a very short, sharp forensic incursion that will be over in a couple of days or maximum in a couple of weeks. And we know how some of the incidents in the Gulf went over the past couple of years. There's an analysis by Beltrue inside the Independent. It's got a rather concerning headline. The headline basically is, we're already in a Middle East war, one that will be very difficult to stop. Conflict with unimaginable death toll now just over the horizon. And that's the Irish Independent this morning. Irish Sun this morning. Singer sneaks on to quiz to surprise Ada. Robbie Williams jokingly played a contestant on Michael McIntyre's The Wheel to surprise his wife, Ada Field, who appeared as a guest expert on the show, and Robbie in disguise. And then it's like, da-da, look at me, isn't this right? Also inside in the Times, tired and emotional, tired spelt with a Y, all four tyres of a Ryanair plane exploded during landing at an Italian airport on Tuesday, leaving the jet and its passengers stuck on the runway. Departing and arriving flights were suspended at Bergamo Arroyo at Serio Airport near Milan. It's understood the flight was coming from Barcelona. Its tyres popped at around 8 a.m. A Ryanair spokesperson said they experienced a tyre issue upon landing. Passengers disembarked normally and the aircraft was inspected by engineers who were currently servicing the plane. That's the Ryanair statement. And thankfully, everyone safe and all is well. Also inside the Sun this morning, Dáil debate, Foley defends phone ban. And this is one of those stories that's going to run and run and run over the next couple of months. And it's been discussed on the show and we've had the pros and cons. This is the proposed ban on phones in schools. And a lot of discussion coming on that. Norma Foley very much coming down in favour of a ban, and a lot more to be discussed on that. New budget scandal again. Ouch, TD slams another waste of money over a €9 million plan to provide pouches for pupils to put their mobile phones into. And that's very much the Norma Foley story again. The plan, and in fairness, that this was flagged 2 weeks ago that there would be €9 million spent. I certainly saw that figure maybe 2-3 weeks ago, that money would be spent as a pilot basis at a number of schools to buy these special pouches that children can put the phones into, the pouches, and that renders the phones inoperable. Now, it does mean, and we had this discussion on the programme before, there will be some children who will need their phones. I gave the experience that, for instance, I have a niece who was in the past year diagnosed with quite serious diabetes, and she wears a permanent scanner which is linked up to her phone. And effectively, her phone and her mum's phone and her dad's phone, all three of the phones, will ping an alert if she is running low on sugar, and she will always have a bottle of Lucozade or whatever in her bag. And so she'll maybe get a ping on the phone that will literally say, drink some Lucozade. Now, she's at the newly diagnosed stage. She's at the point in her diabetes where they're still, and it takes a couple of years to figure out how to control something like that. So she's at that point where she's learning, they're learning, everyone's learning. So they're dependent so much on these alerts coming to the phones. So obviously there's going to have to be concessions made in situations like that. The phone serves an absolutely vital purpose, and we are in an era where our phones can do so much for us, and it's the age-old dichotomy of things like the internet and things like smartphones and things like that. They can do so much, but they can also cause so much difficulty as well. And it's going to be a very, very interesting debate. And the Irish Daily Star, Killer Kelly Noble back in court, convicted. Killer Kelly Noble was back in court yesterday, accused of assaulting a woman. Noble, who previously served time for stabbing a young mother to death, has been charged with assault causing harm to a woman at Hogan Place in Dublin too. And also, Daniel Day-Lewis. You know Daniel Day-Lewis, the actor who retired and is never going to appear in a film again? Yeah, he's appearing in a film. Acting legend out of retirement for Sun's film project, Daniel Day-Lewis has announced he will step out of retirement after 7 years to star in his Sun's movie. The actor will star in Focus Features and Plan B's upcoming film Anemone, which marks the directorial debut of his son, Ronan Day-Lewis. So if you're a Daniel Day fan and you thought you would never get to see Daniel on a screen again, the good news is you will. He'll be appearing in his son Ronan's new film, Anemone, and that'll be with us in due course. Just a couple of comments. Caller says, I'm 62. I have no health issues. Am I entitled to the flu jab for free? I'm not sure about that. What I would do is go into your local pharmacist and ask them. They'll be able to give you the full details. My understanding was that it was those in receipt of the pension are those who automatically qualify. I'm not aware that you qualify at the age of 62. Perhaps you do, but double check that is the best thing to do. A couple of other comments that have been coming into the show. I understand issues facing wheelchair users. This comes after a previous discussion on the programme. Caller says, I have had a lot of heart problems. I've had surgeries. I have to pull the door open hard. In some places, it's so heavy. Some people aren't able-bodied to get in, even though they look like it. And yeah, that's something, I mean, and I notice a lot now we'll see signs in places saying, beware of hidden disabilities. That there may be many people who have disabilities that you don't necessarily see. And certainly someone who's had heart surgery, someone who's had issues like that, are in a position where maybe if there's a big heavy door, they don't have the strength to push it. They can walk, they don't look disabled on the outside, but we always have to bear that in mind. Cotter says, this isn't the giveaway budget that people think it is. It's a win us an election budget. It has no long-term support, and as usual, the working person is the one who has gained the least. Another caller says Slough University Hospital is the latest to refuse cash payments. How long before Letterkenny follows suit? And there's a long and ongoing discussion about cash and the right of access to cash and the right to use cash. And there's a bill going through the Dáil at the moment. One of the things, for instance, that they're discussing is that everybody should be within 5 kilometres of an ATM machine. Now, as was pointed out by Deputy Pringle on the programme earlier with Greg and was pointed out during a discussion in the Dáil in recent days as well, we've now got to the point where a lot of the banks are taking out their ATMs. You'll have noticed, and I've noticed certainly over the past while, if you go even at the banks now at this stage, what you will very, very rarely see is a Bank of Ireland ATM or a permanent CSB ATM or an AIB ATM. You'll see them offered by companies like Eurocash and Cash Bank, and I'm making these names up, but they're effectively private companies who are offering this service. And you'll notice now that the ATM you're using, it's very, very rare you'll see one. Even the ones in petrol stations used to be banks, and they used to be branded as banks, but that's not the case anymore. Now, we were speaking earlier about the budget, and we're going to have a discussion about the budget now. Delighted to say we're joined on line one this morning by Minister James Lawless. Minister Lawless is a minister in the Departments of Transport and also Environment, Climate and Communications. Minister, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well indeed. Good to talk to you, and thank you indeed for joining us this morning. Minister, one of the comments we're getting this morning from a number of people is, and I'll give you the comment straightforwardly. Caller says, this isn't a good budget, it's a win us an election budget. Is this effectively the most expensive election manifesto in the history of the state?
Well, it's certainly the most generous budget in the history of the state, and that's because we have an unprecedented surplus available to the state this year. Not only the Apple tax of some 13 billion, AIB dividend of 3 billion, it's about 16 billion, but then not to be forgotten, good management of the economy, good tax receipts, thanks to the people of Ireland going to work every day and setting up businesses and running industry and making contributions. So we have a very large amount of money this year, probably the largest that's ever been there to spend. And I think rightly that money is being spent in a wise way. So it's not being, as some maybe opposition parties suggest, splash the cash and throw it around. It's actually being put into sort of long-term investment. So water projects, energy projects, transport infrastructure, and those big ticket things that will stand us for decades to come. Not for the election, could be a few weeks, could be a few months. But this is investment that will stand to us in, you know, a 10 election cycle time, in 50 years' time. We should be seeing the benefits of those kind of investments. So, look, I think it's been done wisely. I think that there has been money put into taxpayers' pockets as well, and indeed anyone on state benefits. Everybody has seen their take-home go up, whatever form of income you receive. and then lots of different sports. And then in my own department of transport, significant spending right across the country, many, many routes. Even your own, say, Donegal Airport, we'll get some support from the Regional Airports Fund, which I announced on Tuesday. Just to mention one thing, I was up in Donegal recently, the Donegal Dairy Greenway, big up and part of my department's funding. We're giving $1 million a day to active travel over the last year. So that's another example. I was up in Malin Head during the summer with your superb Coast Guard team up there. And the Coast Guard team are receiving a $70 million injection to support new helicopters, new drones, new technologies to keep our coastal community safe. And that's just within my own department, just a very quick...
Yeah, and indeed, there are a number of Donegal projects and issues I do want to discuss with you in a few moments. But I want to stay with the general budget just for a while. Talk to me about the targeting of benefits and cost of living payments in particular. One of the points that's being made is when it comes to things like childcare, when it comes to things like electricity bill support, energy supports, a lot of those are universal. The reality of the situation is there are many, many people in our communities, and we know this, who need extra money badly to deal with an ESB bill. If I can be frank, I don't. Yet I get exactly the same as the person down the road who is financially struggling. Is it right that someone like me, who's on a reasonably good salary and can afford, thankfully, to pay my electricity bill, is it right that I get the same support as someone maybe down the road who is genuinely in financial trouble?
Well, I'm going to be equally frank back. You can always give it back. That's what I did. I signed a form at the start of the year to pay 10% of my salary back to the state just to get it back, because I can't see what it is. And I think the state, many people are in difficulty, so I signed a form and relinquished 10% of my salary to the state. So anybody can do that if they wish to. So you don't have to take the money, I suppose. But in terms of the energy credit that's out there, the way that's done, and there's been a lot of discussions about this, and I've been in. Well, I would think that if this was going to be a permanent measure that was there on the statute books for the next 100 years or even the next 10 years, I would say, yeah, look, we need to get this more focused, more targeted. We need to maybe exclude people at the top and maybe double in a bit on people at the bottom. The problem with doing that is there's a huge administration, there's systems, there's IT, there's all kinds of infrastructure. By the time you actually work out how to do it, first of all, you'd be into next summer, never mind next winter, and you'd actually need to spend more trying to work that out than just doing it. So the decision was taken. And also, I would say, this is probably the end of those type of credit receipts, those kind of winter energy credits. Thankfully, the crisis is abating in terms of the inflation is back to 2%. At one stage, it was up around 8, 9, 10%. It's now fallen back to 2%. We're beginning to see mortgage rates starting to come down at last. Inflation across the Eurozone is falling, and Ireland's it's falling maybe faster than most. So we're beginning to stabilise. So it's not something that... It was an emergency measure. It was put in place at the end of COVID after the war in Ukraine. It's been maintained. It's probably going to begin tapering off. So this may be, this budget may be the last of those kind of energy credits in it. That'll be the decision for the next government, because that's a year away now. But that's the reason behind that.
A lot of talk about the Apple money, the $14 billion that's coming from Apple, and we won't get into the provenance and the history behind that story, but that $14 billion is coming. Now, when we speak about, at the moment the state has tens of billions of a surplus, we must bear in mind that a lot of that is taken up with one-offs like the Apple money. The perceived wisdom is that that's got to go on infrastructural spending. That money has got to go on something that's going to be of long-term benefit. Now, I have no doubt that you could appear on 10 local radio stations today, and I have no doubt that colleagues of mine in the other 9 radio stations could give you a €14 billion list of infrastructural issues that are necessary in their area. For instance, I can give you in Donegal, off the top of my head, there's a dire need for a new bridge over the River Swilly in Letterkenny, what we call locally the Bonaghy Link, and I'm sure you've heard a lot about that particular bridge. It's been discussed at cabinet level in terms of the overall 10T. It's part of that overall 10T project.
Yep.
You've got a very active and articulate rail campaign group wanting to restore railways to Donegal, and they're saying, look, we've been arguing for rail in Donegal for a long time. We haven't had a railway in Donegal since 1959. We now have the opportunity to use some of that $14 billion to reinstate rail tracks in the county and implement some of the recommendations of that strategic rail All-Ireland review that was published by the government and by the Stormont executive in the past number of months. Every area is going to have that that potential for spending those Apple billions. How are they going to be How is it going to be organised? Is it going to go on a county-by-county basis? Is it going to go on one massive national issue? Like, for instance, I've heard talk of the need to bring water from the Shannon to Dublin, and that's going to be a massive infrastructural project. And, I mean, even talking of Irish water, I mean, you know, we could easily spend a couple of billion updating Irish water infrastructure in Donegal as well. I mean, I could easily give you 14 billion worth of stuff just to be done within 10 square miles of this studio.
Yeah.
You have a big decision in terms of how that Apple money is going to be invested. Will you be looking at things like the Donegal Rail Service? Will you be looking at things like the new bridge over the River Swilly? Will that be the sort of thing you want to target?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I hear what you're saying. And in Kildare, where I represent, I could probably give you 14 billion worth of spend in my own village alone. Never mind, you know, the whole country. So I completely understand that every community will have its own list, and every county indeed will have its own list of projects which are very important and strategically important to the county, and, you know, maybe waited for many years. But ultimately, yes, I can't give a definitive answer on particular projects today, but what I will say, yeah, that's the entire intention of it. So for like that bridge that you mentioned, there was investment. Just when I came into this position in July, I signed off on a significant 10T funding investment for Donegal, actually. Now, I'll have to double check and see whether that bridge is contained within that scope, but certainly there's a 10T road upgrade coming for Donegal that's now been approved by Cabinet. That was one of the first things I did when I took on this position. In terms of you mentioned a few other, the strategic rail review. Yeah, look, that's a huge, ambitious project. I would love to see that come to fruition. That is a kind of 25-year plan. That is goes up to 2050. It does include bringing the rail into Donegal. You know, and I often look at the map and think, you know, unfortunately, I suppose that's one of the reasons the aviation is so critical for Donegal. That's why we've invested to get it in the airport there. And also, I met City Derry Airport recently, because I know for the other side of the county, that's almost as close, if not closer, than Gweedore. So, you know, trying to engage with the people there as well, because we need to make sure that the people of Donegal have a good, solid link to the capital city and to elsewhere in the absence of having that railway place just yet. But that's something we should be delivering.
Speaking of the air service linking Donegal Airport with Dublin, we spoke this week to Conor McCarthy of Emerald Airways, and he made the point that they're getting the message now as a result of the cap at Dublin Airport. They're getting the same message from Dublin Airport Authority as every other airline is getting. You have to cut your flights by 5%. Now, they're saying even though that Donegal-Dublin service is a PSO, it operates under a public service obligation with funding from Europe because it's a necessary service for the community. He's saying they still have to treat that flight in exactly the same way as all other flights. They have to treat it from a commercial point of view. And he said, if they look at that Donegal flight with a purely commercial emphasis, it may compromise that flight into the future and may determine whether or not they apply again for that PSO when it comes up for renewal next year or the year after next. So, I mean, looking at that Dublin Airport cap, for instance, can you even, as a minister, look at keeping the PSO routes out of the determination of those caps and the impact they're going to have on flight numbers and flights being cut?
So I saw that piece with Conor, and I'm Conor McCarthy, and I'm meeting him. I've invited him to come to meet me in the department or whatever's convenient. I'm meeting a number of stakeholders at the moment around the airport, capital of an airport. I'm meeting all the airlines, including Emerald. I've met Ryanair and Aer Lingus already. I've met the American Airlines. I've met the regulator. I have had conversations with the regulator where I said to the regulator, can certain slots be protected or ring-fenced? Another suggestion I put to him, so the PSO is one that's come up in this conversation. I think that's a good suggestion. I also said the likes of sports teams, if you say the Irish Olympic team are heading to something next year, or if the Olympics happen to be, you know, they weren't affected, thankfully, this year, but if there's another event of national importance next year, we wouldn't want to see a situation where sports teams couldn't get off the ground. Now, the only thing is, I flip that argument a little bit and say, one of the things I'm saying to people who come to me at Dublin Airport is, there's lots of other airports, including Donegal and including City of Derry, and indeed including Knock, you know, and right down the west coast, down to Shannon and Cork. And there's no good reason why 86% of air traffic has to go out of one north side Dublin location. I think we're far too focused and concentrated in around the Dublin Airport. And I think that, you know, even if there was not a cap, now I want to lift the cap. I'm working to do that. There is planning permission in place, and, you know, no politician can rip up the planning rules. But I do think the cap should be lifted. But I also think that we should spread that around more evenly. But I will be engaging with Emerald Airlines and Conor on that. And I would not like to see a situation where that sort of PSO route was affected. I hope the regulator can find some way to sort of ring fence those sort of public service journeys.
A big announcement was made yesterday in the Stormont Assembly, with regards to the A5 is going to go ahead. And I'm sure as a junior minister with responsibility for transport, this is an area you've been well briefed on over the past number of months. The Irish government has a long-standing commitment to the A5. We now finally have confirmation it is going ahead, and within a matter of months we expect to have shovels in the ground and actually work start on that massive A5 development. As you'll appreciate, it's a huge development for Donegal. The A5 is part of the main road between Letterkenny and Dublin. We travel through into Strabane and through Oma over as far as Auchnacloy and then cross back in. That is the main road between northeast Donegal and Dublin. The Irish government's commitment is ring fenced. You're going to live up to that commitment, and you're going to support the Stormont executive and others in as much as you can to get that A5 built as quickly as possible.
Absolutely, I had a discussion on that only yesterday. It's a very big price tag, I should say. It's not too far short of 1 billion. And that's money being put by the state, by the Irish state, into that shared island infrastructure. Working with the northern counterparts, but being honest, almost entirely funded by the south, by the Republic. I think it's also important that would actually be both sides of the border. So I think it's important if we're investing in the A5, that we also invest in the road that goes into it from Monaghan and then comes out of it in Donegal. So that's end to end. I think it'd be quite ironic to have a situation where the Republic funded significant investments in the north, only to find you drive off it again and the roads were substandard. So it needs to be end to end. I would like to see a contribution, maybe a greater contribution from the northern executive towards that. As I understand at the moment, they're not in a position to do so. The talk's ongoing around that, but if the project is committed to, it will happen. It's part of the Shared Island project, which I'm very passionate about myself, and would share that vision that we need to integrate, you know, as fully as possible, bringing the community together, bringing the island together, so that we're everything but, you know, united in everything but jurisdiction, and perhaps that will come eventually. But so it's something I'd be very supportive of, but it is happening. But as I say, it's not cheap. And I suppose the other point I'd make, for everything that we spend money on, is something else that we can't spend money on. So the other projects you're talking about there, you know, quite rightly you're advocating for in Donegal, you know, and indeed everywhere else in the country, you know, for every pound you spend in one place, it's a pound less for something else.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, in terms of coming off the A5 into the Republic on the Donegal side, the Letterkenny to Lifford and then onto the A5, that's part of the much-vaunted 10T that we spoke to earlier, so that's very much part of that 10T project. So that is, as they say, on the books already. In terms of your own overall, the transport we've talked a lot of, you're also obviously responsibility for the issues of environment, climate and communications. Communications briefs that will include broadband, of course. Donegal, one of the counties looking at the national broadband plan and the need to get that implemented as quickly as possible. And National Broadband Ireland are constantly telling us we're improving, we're bringing more and more and more and more homes online. Is the progress on the national broadband plan moving as quickly as you had hoped? And what provisions can come from this budget and from the increased money available to speed that process up?
Yes, look, I hope that's something that we will get over the line in the next 12 months, because that's been going on for some years. I think it is a success story, to be honest. It has largely succeeded, and I know there's parts of Donegal still lacking, and indeed there's parts of Kildare. I'm talking this morning from my home in Salon, it's kind of Kildare, and this place is a couple miles out the road that I was only engaging with yesterday, that it hasn't quite reached them yet. And I'm only an hour from Dublin. So, you know, there's pockets around the country that are still being connected. But by and large, I think 95% plus of the country has now been plugged in. And in the budget debate last night, actually, it was actually called out as one of the projects, because there is rightly a focus on projects that go over budget and go over time. But the National Broadband Plan is seen as one that's come in on budget and largely on time. And it's into the last sort of 5% now. So I would hope and I would expect, and everything I've been told in the department is that, so like, say, your areas in Donegal, and indeed the ones I know here in Kildare, there's pockets around the country. They should be patched in the next 12 months or so. We should see this brought to a head. I think it's so important, and I think that when this plan was envisaged, we didn't know about COVID. We probably didn't really know about hybrid working to the same extent. And it's just, it reinforced and emphasized the way people can now work from their home, wherever it happens to be. And you know, I've often seen pictures of people online from the beautiful Donegal coast, and they're in a Zoom call in San Francisco or whatever, down to Dublin and back again. And that's the way it should be. And I think it's enabled the way we've changed our lifestyles over the last couple of years, brought upon by COVID, but in some ways embraced for family for any reasons and lots of other good reasons, cutting our commuting times and all that. So lots of really good reasons to do it. I say we didn't expect COVID to come along, but we've changed our lifestyles as a result. And this infrastructure, it's nearly there, and that's only going to get better. And So yeah, I expect that to be brought in over the next 12 months.
Before I let you go, Minister, I want you to have a listen to our next caller. We're going to speak to Louise, who is a bus escort. And she's saying that bus escorts haven't been included in the budget. Louise, good morning.
Good morning.
Louise, we have the Minister of State with responsibility for transport on the line with us. Now, obviously, the bus escort issue is one that will have impact on education and responsibility with the Department of Education as well. But you're telling us that whereas before bus escorts were treated quite well, you've been somewhat left behind in government policy over the past number of years.
Completely left behind, like we are invisible. In 2011, the acting minimum wage as a bus escort was $11.69, and the national minimum wage at that time was $7.65, meaning we were €4 above the national minimum wage. If you want to now fast forward 2024-25, we actually need an increase of 10 cents just to make minimum wage. We do not get paid during the holidays of the school, which means then, again, if you want to add up the wages and divide them by the weeks of the year, that puts us majorly below the national living wage or the national minimum wage, because we do not get paid, like the SNAs get paid and the school secretaries get paid. We do not get paid during the holidays. So we either have to sign on or we have to split, which is what I do. I split my wages for weeks, which means I then do not have, it pushes me into the poverty level. I do not have the national minimum wage to live on. I have far less because I need to make subsidies in my own employment, in my wages, to last, make my money last throughout the year.
Louise, thanks indeed for that. Minister, I know that this is probably predominantly education more so than your own department, but it's an interesting one, and I'm sure it's one you'll be able to bring back to Norma Foley and others in her department.
No, it is indeed, and I'm guessing that's, yeah, and it's not my department, but I'm guessing that's a school bus.
It is indeed, yes.
School bus grant, okay. Yeah. So that is education. Yeah. I will bring that back. But just to mention, in terms of escorts and companions and buses, we have extended the free travel scheme to include a companion forevermore. So that's something that was in the budget. Again, I think it's a social measure. I think it's progressive. So people for years, when they reach their maturity, have been able to enjoy free travel. And that's something Fianna Fáil, indeed Charlie Haughey, brought in many, many years ago and has been enjoyed for many generations since. That will actually now bring that to the next level, where they can bring somebody with them. They can bring a family member, a companion. And like, that's a really progressive move. And I think it's a socially positive move as well. So I know it's slightly different to what your caller was talking about, but just to mention, because it's relevant. But yeah. I will take the bus issue back to the department.
Right, Louise, thank you very much indeed for that. And certainly the Minister has told us he will bring that back to Minister Norma Foley and her department. In the meantime...
Can I say as well how important it is, absolutely imperative it is. We work for special school. We work for the special schools of Donegal. We work with the most vulnerable children in our county. We are responsible for them on a box, in a tin bus. We don't have any teachers to ask for advice. We solely care for those children after they get put on the bus and until they arrive safely to their destination. We are their main support and their main carers. We are the first step of their educational journey as they leave their home. And we are being bullied and we are being looked over constantly by ministers. We have our own reference number for emails now, for Norma Foley, because we have asked her that many times.
Have you spoken to your local representatives? Have you engaged with your local representatives on the ground?
Yes, of course we have. We spoke to Paulus McLaughlin and he has been...
Okay, well, perhaps your government representative, Charlie McConlogue, would be the government representative. He might be the best one to speak to. Have you talked to Charlie? I'd suggest he'd probably be the best person, because no. Paulus is a great CD, but he's not in government. So I'd suggest, look, I'll put my advice to you on this call. Get in touch with Charlie McConlogue's office. He's the man that can help you on this.
We've actually
and Charlie wants to see you on.
Norma Foley and invited her.
Yeah.
To come on, come on and see what I do. See what I do. And
but Norma's in Kerry, so Charlie's in Donegal. I'd say he's your best bet. Yeah. Sorry, that's just my advice. Yep. If that was me, I'd go to my local government representative in the first instance.
Okay, well, there's a bit of advice, Louise, that maybe you could maybe try Charlie McConlogue's office and see where you get in the meantime. Louise, and thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. And Minister James Lawless, thank you indeed for speaking to us as well. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We're going to take a short break back after these. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. And we are now looking at a quiz. The quiz is courtesy of Green's Shoes, who have stores in Letterkenny, Falkara, Limerick and Galway, and are also online at greensshoes.com. A pair of Skechers on offer today, Thursday, and Skechers are great shoes indeed. We're going to give you the opening line from a well-known song, and we want you to text or WhatsApp your answer to 086 60 25,000 with your name and the answer, and we'll announce the winner a little bit later on in the programme. The line in question, I made it through the wilderness, somehow I made it through. We need you to tell us the name of the song of which that is the opening line. I made it through the wilderness, somehow I made it through. And a pair of Skechers is on offer. Now, this is October, and October is National Reuse Month. And National Reuse Month is geared towards upping our adherence toward recycling targets. And a new campaign from My Waste, Take a Minute Before You Bin It, is looking at the disconnect between good intentions and actual habit. Dr. Joanne Rourke is a spokesperson for My Waste, and delighted to say she joins us this morning on Zoom. Joanne, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well indeed, thank you. That's an interesting comment. We have good intentions, but sometimes our habits don't match our intentions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everybody knows the importance of recycling, and, you know, we have the best of intentions, most of us, but life is busy. And, you know, when you're running around your kitchen trying to make dinner and get it into the kids and get them out to their sports practice, or if you're working at a very busy deli counter or something and you have a big queue of people in front of you waiting for their sandwiches, it's, you know, not always at the front of your mind to recycle properly. If something in your hand, it needs to go into a bin, and sometimes it just goes into the nearest bin or any bin. So this campaign, Take a Minute Before You Bin It, it's a national initiative from My Waste, and we're asking people to, you know, just pause for a minute when you have something in your hand and you want to bin it. Think about where that item should go and then bin it properly. It just takes a couple of seconds. And when I say properly, that means food waste in your food waste bin, or your papers and plastic packaging in your recycling bin. And the reason we're running this campaign is because, although it may not seem like it, those items are actually really valuable. And at the moment, according to EPA research, 2/3 of what is in your general waste bin could actually be recycled. And we're losing all that valuable material. So food can't be composted, and then our, you know, paper and plastic packaging that goes into the general waste bin, that won't be recycled into new products.
And when you say plastic packaging, a lot of us will put in any container that we see that little logo with the two sort of swirly arrows, that mm-hmm. the recycle logo. I mean, I think we all know that logo at this point. So, yeah, we'll certainly put that into the recycle bin. But even, say, the plastic wrapper that you get in a bag of carrots or something, a lot of the time we tend to maybe just put that into the bin rather than into recycling. Are you saying that if we get carrots in a little plastic bag, that plastic bag can go into recycling?
Absolutely. So there's two things here. First of all, yes, a couple of years ago, we were asking people to put soft plastics. By soft plastics, I mean, you know, the bag around the carrots or your chicken goujons or anything you can scrunch up, to put that into the general waste bin. Because at the time, the waste companies in their sorting centres, those bags would sort of clog up the machines, but they've changed the machines now and they can't handle it. So now all your soft plastics go into your recycling bin. Also, the labeling can be a bit confusing. So there's lots of different types of labels, and some of them say, you know, not for recycling yet or whatever. Whatever you have that's plastic, put it into your recycling bin, because number one, technologies are changing all the time. So, you know, things that mightn't have been able to be recycled 2 years ago can now be recycled. But also, more importantly, the waste companies actually have sorting centres. So they will sort that stuff. So if something can't be recycled, they will take it out. But it's better to have it in there and have it taken out. And the really important thing when you're putting anything into your recycling bin is to make sure it is clean, dry and loose. So that just means you clean it out. You take all the remnants of, let's say, the yogurt out of your yogurt pot, give it a little dry if you can, or give it a good shake, and then put it into your recycling bin. And the reason that's important is that if there's excess fluid or water in your recycling bin, that will get any paper in there wet, and then that paper won't be recycled. And I think a really good point this morning I want to make is that if you're in any doubt at all about any material, whether it can be recycled or not, if you actually go to mywaste.ie, you can find all the information there. We have an A to Z where you can search for any item, and it will tell you what can be recycled and what can't, and what bin it should go into, and whether it should go to your local civic amenity site, for instance.
And in terms of, and this is a constant discussion and a question that always comes up in discussions like this, when you have, say, a pizza box, you've had your pizza, obviously the top of the box and the sides and so on and so forth are fine. There's going to be a little bit of perhaps grease on the bottom of the box where your pizza has been sitting, or your garlic bread or whatever. Would it be a matter of that sort of cardboard that's contaminated that can't be recycled, but the rest of the box can?
Yeah, that's what happens. And I'm just smiling here because everybody's asking me about pizza boxes this week.
Yeah.
So with a pizza box, you know, you get your takeaway and there's some oil and maybe, you know, bits of pepper or cheese or whatever on the box. You can actually compost that box. So the choice you have here is you could break it up and take out the stained bits, I suppose, the soiled bits, and put that into your compost bin, or you could put the whole lot into your compost bin.
Dr. John Rourke, thank you very much indeed. National Reuse Month. Take a minute before you bin it. And really, there used to be no saying, if in doubt, leave it out. In this case, maybe it's, if in doubt, put it in, it'll get sorted later.
Well, if in doubt, check it out, I'd say. Check it out on mywaste.ie.
Yeah. Excellent. Dr. John Rourke, thank you very much indeed.